Let's talk about some MicroPython stuff then. We'll do a little quick review. Some files on the PyBoard, PYB Flash, it looked like this. What does boot.py do? Initial setup configuration stuff that goes there. For the most part, you don't need to touch that. Okay, for what we're doing here at least, right? So that's going to run every time the PyBoard starts up. That's either when you press Control D, if you're in the REPL and do a soft restart, or as soon as it powers up when you plug it in, boot will run right away. Again, it's used for setup and configuration. Okay. What's main.py for? Yeah, that's like where your main code goes, effectively. When does it run? It runs immediately after boot. Whoever said that over here. Right? So as soon as whatever's in boot finishes, main.py runs. Okay. And again, like we said, hinted by the name, that's where the kind of main part of your code goes. That's largely what we change in here. Okay. And of course, it can reference other files, which we will do later in the semester. Make sure that boot and main are on the root of that PYB flash. They can't be in a folder or something like that. The PyBoard won't recognize them inside a folder. All right. Okay. We mentioned referencing other files. Right, and effectively, that's what those import things do. Some of them just happen to be bundled into MicroPython. Okay, that's what these imports are all about. So the one we'll almost always import, I think pretty much always, is PYB. Those are kind of special functions written for the PyBoard itself. Right. So we've used the one already to define the LEDs, and we'll mess with that a little bit later today as well. So importing PYB gives you access to this code that the MicroPython developers wrote specifically for the PyBoard. Right. Same thing about time. There's an entire library of time functions there for you. So you import time, they're all available to you, and then to use functions from that module you've imported, you have the module name, dot, and whatever function you want to run. Okay. If I've imported time, and I want to know what functions are available for time, what can I do? I can do help, certainly. How else could I get there, maybe? I heard somebody say it. Yeah, you could tab over. So I could do time, in the REPL, I could do time dot and hit tab, and it's going to give me all the options that I could use to complete that. Okay. So if I knew it was some kind of sleep thing, I don't remember exactly what the syntax is, time dot s in tab, and it's going to give you all the options for those commands that start with time dot s. So that's one way to get to those functions if you don't remember the exact syntax. Okay. These are common ones in that time library, is why I put them on this slide. You can sleep for seconds, you can sleep for milliseconds, you can sleep for microseconds. And during that sleep command, remember, nothing else is happening. Right? There's no, not reading sensors, it's sleeping. Processor's sleeping. Okay. In the REPL, there are a few special key commands. Okay? What does Control D do? Soft reboot. Good job. What does Control C? It's going to stop. It's going to break. In Python, it'll be called a keyboard interrupt, is what you would see. Right? So that will basically kill or break any running script. So, for example, we're going to write some code today that will run indefinitely forever. So if you plug into your PyBoard and that's running, you'll never get to the REPL because that main.py is actually running and running and running. Right? So you need to hit Control C to break that while loop we're going to write and actually break out to the REPL. Okay? So if you ever get to the REPL and don't see the actual prompt, this is one thing to try. Control C to kill whatever's running on the board itself. How can I paste large-ish blocks of code into the REPL? Somebody say Control E. It's an enter paste mode. It will tell you, hey, you're in paste mode. Then I can paste stuff however I like to paste stuff. And then it tells you what to do. If you want to run what you just pasted in, it's Control D. If you want to just ignore that, hey, I made a mistake, I don't want to run that, Control C will get you out of paste mode. So these will help you and kind of help control execution in the REPL. I'm going to keep including this in the lectures, because just have these bookmarked, right? Have them open. You're working on more complex stuff as we go along. We'll be referencing these more, and this is where you can go for more help in any of those functions. Okay. What's our recommended workflow for getting code running on the PyBoard? Okay. Write it, save it where? Save it somewhere on your computer, right? I showed you guys the folder I have that has folder names just based on what the functionality of the main script is. Right? If you look at that, our GitHub repository looks just like my local folder on my computer. Okay, so you save your file locally, right? Then what? So I want to take whatever main I want to run on the PyBoard, drag it onto PYB Flash, replace the main.py that's there. Copy it over however you would normally drag a file onto a flash drive. It's just that. Okay? Then what? You need a soft reset. If I'm going to soft reset, that means I need to be connected in the REPL. Okay? And we're actually working in Sublime Text. Drag edited version, soft reboot, control D. Okay. Let's talk about in-class exercise one. Who went away and tried that out between last week? A few of you. Okay. So, we wanted to print the odd numbers between 1 and 27. Here's a link. Actually, need to change that link, huh? Yeah, that's default. I'll update that in the PDF version of this. It's getting posted. Sorry about that. So there's lots of ways, and as you'll find as you're writing code, there's infinitely many ways to do things generally, right? So what are some ways? Some of you that went away and worked on it and got it, how'd you do it? Use an odd number function. Yeah. Okay. 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 So I did that. Basically, what you're describing. In this case, this is not really a function, right? This is just a variable that I'm saving the result of this calculation. That's one way to do it, right? So this is going to go, counter is going to go from 0 to 13. Every loop through this, I multiply counter by 2 and add 1. It's going to give me odd numbers that I wanted. And I just print those out. Right? That's one way. How else could I do it? Hold on to that one for a second.
So I did in range I in range of 28, and then I did I modulus 2, and if the remainder equals yeah. 1, then I would print that number.
Sure.
If that number was 13, and you say number 13 is bad luck, and then I modulus.
That's in class exercise 2. Hold on to that one. This is just one. Just print out the numbers. Okay. So that modulus operator. That's useful. Let me pull that up, show you guys. Pull this over for now. So, modulus operator in Python is what? What's the syntax in Python? Yeah, how did you get the modulus? Okay. 2%. Oops. Yeah, I got it. 2% 1 gives me what? It's always even, right? So if I did 2, 4 modulus 2 gives me what? Gives me 0 as well. It's the even division. Okay. 4 modulus 3. 1. It's the remainder of the whole number division. Think about elementary school division, you got those remainder things, right? It's just the remainder of the division. So that modulus number can get you to some information about that. And it's a good way to switch on alternate cases like you did there. Okay. back to this. How else can I do it? Let's see. We had a while loop. Did your while loop look like that? Something like that, maybe. Right? So I start counter equal to 1, and then while counter is less than or equal to 27, I can print the counter and then increment it by 2. So I had 1 the first time. Counter would now be 3. Is it still less than 27? Yeah, I can print it out and continue that. Okay. I'll show you this one because this will maybe be helpful to you as well. That range actually has a third parameter that you can use. All right. So you can go the range to increment over, and then what the value of that incrementation is. Right. So I can go from 1 to 29 in 2 steps at a time. And that will give me 1 to 27 as well. Yes? The short answer is I forget. But you can try it and see. We can try real quick since I had the terminal up. 27, 1. Oops. So yeah, you can increment down if you want. All right. So there are, I think, 7 or 8 different ways to solve in class exercise 1 in the code. It's in GitHub now. I posted it earlier today. But again, it includes, I think, 7 or 8 different ways to solve that. And again, there are way, way more than that. Okay, let's talk a little bit about your hardware. We mentioned before that we have 4 LEDs on board. They are numbered as such. The red one that we've messed with so far is LED 1. The green one is numbered as LED 2. And you have a yellow is LED 3. And then a blue one is LED 4. Okay. You have 2 buttons, which we are going to interact with one of these today. The reset button will like do a hard reset. So that's like pushing the power button on your computer. Like doing a hard reset, unplug from the wall type reset. Okay, rather than start menu restart or Apple menu restart. Okay. There's another button labeled USR, that's a user button. So we can assign that and we can include that as part of our code and interact with that button. We have an accelerometer, which we'll deal with a little bit later, of course. Of course, you have the onboard processor, there's a micro SD card, and then of course your USB slot. This is always available to you on the in the slide notes, but then also via MicroPython. It labels the functionality we use on the board, and this is one reason, one of the ways that this board is way more powerful than a comparable Arduino, is each one of these pens has multiple ways that you can use it. Right, so that's what each of those blocks mean. We're using kind of the core functionality of a lot of these, but it is a bit more flexible even than we're using it in class. So just be aware of that. Right? And we'll talk probably on Thursday about some of these alternative functions for some of these pens. Okay. And I don't remember this mapping. I have to look at this figure all the time. Yes?
So if
yeah, so if you're writing, so the question was, if I'm writing code for a physical device, I think what you're asking, do I have to know which pins are capable of which functions?
Yeah.
Yes, you should know that. And that will be in a diagram something like this, or on a spec sheet, like production spec sheet for whatever processor you're using. We'll tell you the alternative functions. Yes, sir?
On here, how do you tell the difference between digital and analog?
So the question was, how do I tell the difference between digital and analog? All the analog pins capable of analog input are ADC. So there's quite a lot of them. And we'll talk about, we're probably not going to be able to talk about analog inputs until Thursday, but we're getting to those soon. Okay. And you'll notice a lot of those pins are actually still capable of digital input. There's not the strict division like there is on Arduino. That's why you'll see we have to tell it that, hey, it's a digital in or digital out or analog in or analog out. Okay? All right, let's talk about those onboard LEDs. Again, they're number 1 through 4. I would generally recommend assigning some names like this. Right? So what this does is that I know I can do something to the red LED, tell it to do something. One, I don't have to type all this stuff. Right? And two, this is going to be way more easily understandable in your code. Red LED on is a bit more understandable, more explicit about what's going to happen than pyb.led1.on. And then also, if you do this one time at the beginning of your script, you don't have to remember which pen is which, and is it green then yellow, or yellow then green, or whatever. Yeah, you get it right once, and it's right from then on out. These onboard LEDs have a few ways that you can control them. Right? For all four of them, you can turn it on, you turn it off, and you can toggle its state as well. So if it's on, it goes off. If it's off, it goes on. And those are just like you'd expect, on, off, and toggle. Right? You need the parentheses. For the third yellow LED and the fourth LED, there's also this extra function. Doesn't work on the first two, called intensity. So you can actually vary the brightness of those two. Okay. That number inside the parentheses, if it has a number inside, is the brightness between 0 and 255. So 255 is the maximum brightness. 0 is off. If you don't give it a number, it'll tell you what the current output of that pin is, what the current brightness is. So it'll give you what you're telling it, what last time you issued a command to it was, brightness. Okay. That's basically that for LEDs. Onboard LEDs are easy. Okay. Let's look at one example, maybe for the blue LED. Okay. So let's look at this, and then we'll set up and get you guys to run this really quickly. Let's talk through it first. First thing we do is say, hey, I want the fourth LED to be stored, and I want to be able to write blue LED instead of pyb.led4. Right? That allows me to write blue LED on blue LED intensity. Okay. So the first kind of block up there, I turn it on, then I sleep for a full second. So it stays on. Right? And then in between here, I set the intensity to various values, and then finally turn it off, sleeping 1 second in between each one. Okay? So before we try to do this, how can we improve what's happening here? How can we improve this code, maybe? Let me ask you a different way. Go ahead, sorry. Yeah, maybe so I could have, instead of explicitly assigning the intensity and doing repeating time sleep a bunch of times, have some kind of index with a counter or something like that that did that for me. Certainly. I think there's a way, if you were only trying to do this one time, maybe it's not worth the effort. But you still can make this code better. Okay? So let me ask you, let me ask this a different way. If you set up this code and you type this in your main.py, put it on your board and connect with the REPL and all is good, and you control D and the blue light never comes on. How do you debug what's happening? Okay. So step by, line by line. That's a good step, sure. Say you're not getting error, it's just not turning on. What's that? First time I turn off the tell on and do what? Look over the code. Okay. That's a good step. Yes.
How about adding a print?
Yes, that's what I'm looking for. Right? And this, the hardware's not working, the light's not blinking, you're looking at the code, it all looks right. You're guessing effectively what's happening on the board without any feedback. If you're not getting any visual feedback of the LED turning on, what's going wrong? I'm not getting error messages, I don't know what's happening. Right? So we talked about using these print statements to help you debug and help you monitor program execution. So this is a simple example, but if I get to here and I plug in and I control D and restart do a soft restart, and the LED's not turning on, but I'm getting the print statements, that's maybe a hint that I got some actual hardware issues with the, you know, maybe hardware issues with the light, or one of these commands is wrong or something, right? So you can get a wrong command and not have errors. But in this case, I know I can follow the execution of this block of code by just following those print statements. I'm giving myself a chance to really debug. Where's the problem at here? Right? If you boot this up in Control D and you don't get the print statements, that's a good clue that, hey, that what I think is actually running on the board is not running there because it's not printing the stuff out. Right? So you're giving yourself a better chance of figuring out what's wrong by explicitly telling yourself where you are in the execution. Right? I think this extends even more helpfully to more complex code. Okay. So, take a shot at getting this one working on your boards. Hopefully you have the process down by now. We'll walk through. Oh, we got red cards already.
We just can't get it to
conduct. Okay, I'll be up in a sec. So, take a shot. Make this work. All right, looks like a good number of you have that. I'll keep coming around for those that don't. Those of you that have it working. Or everybody heads up right now. I got you. Hold on. If you got a red card, you can just hang it over your laptop. I'll come around as I see them. Let's talk through in-class exercise 2 because this will help you with the next one in-class exercise we're going to do. All right. So in-class exercise 2 from last time, right, was talking about turning on a red LED, so that's why we kind of went through those LEDs first today, a review of those. So, and the hint was modify, extend what you did in exercise 1. So what do I need to modify or extend that we did in exercise 1 to satisfy this one? Let me reword the second bullet point. If the number is 13, print counter equals 13, bad luck, and turn on the red LED. So what does that tell you I need to add to any of those methods? Some kind of if that checks whether the counter or the value is 13 right now. All right. So we can look. We had that solution version 1 where we just used the counter. Calculated an odd number. There we go. So I have exactly what I had before. Rather than printing the value of the counter out each time, I check, is it equal to 13? In that case, I print bad luck, turn the LED on. You guys hold up on what you're working on for a second. Let's pay attention up here. This will help you on what we're getting ready to do, please. Okay. So I just took what I got, I knew working before to count 1 to 27 and added the if else in there. Okay. And I can add that change to any of the code I had before. So I could use that increment by 2 range if I wanted. Right? And have that same LED if. Okay. Ask you this question. Why do I need the LED off down here? If I didn't have that, what happens? After it turns on the first time when counter equals 13, it just stays on forever if I don't tell it to turn off explicitly. Okay. If it's already off and you tell it to turn off, nothing hurt really. So we need to make that when the counter becomes 14, it gets turned back off. So those of you that are having issues, just hold on a sec. We'll bounce around, but I want to move forward because a large percent of us are making progress. And we'll make sure we get through this work as well. We'll come back through and loop through the problems you're having. Okay. The onboard button on the Pi board, the onboard button is called a switch inside MicroPython. It's the one that's called that, right? What we can do with that switch object, we can manually check its status and get back whether it's pressed or not. Or there's another way we can use an interrupt, which we'll talk about the interrupt method much later. Okay? We're going to talk about manually reading that switch now. Right? So we need to import PYB as we do always. And then we can assign a variable, which I'm going to call button in this case. Button equals PYB.switch. It needs to be a capital S, and you need the parentheses. Okay. Once I've done that, right, I can call that switch object just like it's a function, and it'll give me back a Boolean variable. It'll give you back true or false. 1 or 0. Okay. It's true if that button is actually pressed. The onboard button. Okay, so when you call this function, if the button happened to be pressed at the instant you call this function, you get back true. This function will return true. Okay. So, if I wanted to, for example, print out button pressed every time the button was pressed, what would I need to do? Tell me, don't worry about the syntax. Tell me just in plain English what needs to happen. I want to print out button pressed every time the button's pressed. What do I need to do? Just plain English. I need some kind of print statement, button pressed. When does that need to be printed, though? If the button is pressed, which means that I got some kind of true back from this function. Okay. How do I make that go forever? I have a while loop, right? If I make a while loop that has true as an argument, right, how long is, when is this conditional true? All the time. Right. So this while loop keeps looping and looping and looping and looping and looping forever. Okay. And we need to do that because I need to check the button over and over and over again to be able to see when it was actually pressed. Okay. So, what happens here? I call this function, right, on that button object I created, button instance I created. If the button's pressed, what is the value of this guy? All right, somebody say it.
True.
True, yeah. So the button's not pressed, it's false, it doesn't do what's in there. Right? So if it's true, it prints out the button. And then if we have a kind of infinite while loop like this, we want to add a small delay in. So you'll see a lot of our codes that have this kind of structure that's an infinite while loop. We add some small delay. In this case, we're sleeping 100 milliseconds between checking the button each time. Yes, sir? Yeah, so there's some, basically without this sleep, it's doing this as absolute quickly as it can. So you end up basically in a kind of a race condition. The processor's working really hard to do nothing. Whereas this sleep, even a really small one, even a 10-second millisecond sleep or 1 millisecond sleep, slows this down where it has time for the hardware stuff to catch up with what you're asking it to do. Yes, sir?
So it's just kind of anticipating and waiting for a button pressing, and it chills out after it
recognizes. Well, it chills out every time between checking. Right? It doesn't wait for it to be pressed. So every time this loops, no matter, look, this is outside that if, right? So every time this loops, it's waiting 100 milliseconds. So if you got the blue LEDs, try this guy out, and I'll come around and talk to blue LED people if you didn't get that one. So this code, if you wrote this exactly and it's running and you want to stop it, what do you need to do?
Control C
will kill that while loop. We'll break that while loop. Who's got this? Green cards, please. Okay, for those of you that have this, if you don't have this, the notes are already posted. Keep working on it. I'll keep bouncing around. For those of you that have it, this should be pretty straightforward. In class exercise 3. We want to do this forever. So anytime the button is pressed, I want to turn on the green LED. If the button is not pressed, I want the red LED to be on. Right. Should be pretty straightforward, I think, for those of you that make progress. I'll keep bouncing around for those of you that have. Hold up a second. A lot of folks are making this mistake, so let's review it real quick. Okay. Let me get 1 second. It was in our first lecture, I believe. Let me get to the right slide. This will help. This is from the other day, our very first one of these. So look at the syntax here, right? So the if, right, an if conditional, right? You have an if and some conditional, right? You can have an elif with some conditional to check, right? And an else doesn't have a conditional. Elif doesn't have any argument you're giving to it, right? Because what happens here, right, This is what runs if none of these things were true above it. Right? So it's kind of implied conditional that it's evaluating is, hey, all that stuff up there was false. Okay, so you can have ifs. You can have just an if and an else. Right? So for the button, the exercise you guys are working on right now, right? We have an if button, parentheses, and that returns a true if it's pressed or a false if it's not. Right? So we want to do something. If the button is pressed, do some stuff. Well, the only other condition that can be true there is the button's not pressed. Right? So we only need an if and an else. It's a binary thing. It's either pressed or not. Right? So we could have if button is pressed, whatever we need to do to make that happen. Else, and it, whatever runs here will run when the button is not pressed. Are you guys seeing that? Okay. The else doesn't get any conditional. Okay. So I want to, we're running out of time, right? There's another class right after us today. I want to address one point and kind of walk through something with you guys that I see is more of a trouble than you guys not knowing the syntax yet. And we've talked through this. If you can't explain what you want to happen in just plain English, you're not going to be able to write code to do it. Okay, I want to stress that. I can't stress that enough. And I stress that with my graduate students and in their research. Right? So when you're trying to do something like this, right, you need to be able to explain what you want to happen step by step, one step at a time, in plain English. If you can't do that, then yeah, you're not going to be able to write the code to do it. Right, so in this case, right, if the button is pressed, I want to turn on the green LED. Else, right, that's the only other condition. The button only has two conditions. Else, I want to turn on the red LED. Right? So what you need to work on getting towards is being able to explain what you want just in plain English first. Right? It's just like when you're, you know, your English teacher in high school probably wanted you to make outlines. Right, this is kind of like that. Separate out deciding what you want the algorithm to be from what the syntax needs to be. Those are two different kind of thought processes. Okay. The other thing I'm going to ask you guys to do, I know it's tempting when you have a computer right in front of you, is when I'm talking to the entire class, please try to listen to what I'm saying, because I'm trying to help you. Okay. And I find myself, especially today, repeating myself of something I just told to the whole class, for people that were just typing away the whole time. Okay. So I'll try to address things for the class. If I hear more than one person having the same mistake, I'll try to stop everybody and address that for everyone. Right. But we want to make that change, and all of you get that information, so that requires you taking just a 30-second break from what you're doing to listen to what I'm trying to help you do. Okay. If you didn't get this one yet, that's your homework assignment. The other thing I want to stress along with that, there were a small number of you that raise your hand when you said you tried in-class exercise one at home. Right? You're not going to understand this stuff if you're not working on it some. Okay? Our class time is not enough, just like class time in calculus class is not enough to learn everything you need to know about calculus. Right? We're not making assignments. We don't have explicit grading on this, because I want you guys to be able to explore it and not a lot of pressure on really getting it. Okay? There is some, though, right? Because you're going to need this for your final project. So that requires you to put a little bit of time in. Okay? I don't want to have to quiz you guys on this. I don't want to have to do homework assignments on this that are graded. Okay? But if it's clear that nobody's working on it and really trying to get it, then we might have to do that. And I want to. Right? So I'm going to ask you guys to kind of hold up your side of that deal. I'm providing a lot of example code, a lot of class time, bouncing around trying to help. But that requires, again, you guys holding up your side of the deal and trying to learn the stuff, all right? I can't learn it for you. I wish we could learn that way. I'd be a lot smarter if so. Okay. But it requires a little bit of effort on your side. And I think not a lot, honestly. Right? It's not easy, but a little bit of time, and I think you can get it. If you can get through statics, which all of you have, I promise you can learn how to write an if-then or if-else in Python. Right? You have that level of intellectual capability, I promise. Okay, so please try this out for Thursday, and we'll continue marching on. We'll start talking about actually the sensors that are part of your kit on Thursday, namely the analog sensors. The other thing with this is we have to keep moving forward, or we're never going to get through all this in time for you to be able to use it on your final project. So if you have specific questions, what this can do also, if you go back and look at this after class today and ask specific questions about something, ask a specific question in class, and I'm sure someone else had that question. So we can clear the air and make sure we all understand things properly.